All right, let us move into our reflection and listening time. So today is going to be, a little bit like a smorgasbord. You're not going to be able to absorb it all or listen to it all. So I really invite you to listen to your own inner teacher, your own sense of what do you need today to hear from the Spirit of God. And whatever catches your mind or attention, your heart, sit with that and let the rest of it pass. So I want to start with a couple of questions that I'd like a straw poll show of hands on. No right or wrong, no difficult questions. So first question is, who here has heard about Henry Nouwen? So most of us, but not all, have heard the name. Second and final question is, how many of us would say that Henry Nouwen as a person and his words, his writing or listening to him has been significant for your faith journey? And just look around. There's no right or wrong here. I was just genuinely curious to know because I know a few, but others not. Thank you. There's quite a personal feeling, I don't know about what will come across, in sharing this with you today. Because then I look back over my life, so I'm 66 in September, and because I grew up in a Christian family, a faithful Christian family, I mean, God, my relationship with God has always been with me, more or less. And if I look back over those 65 years, there are a few people I know, like my parents, people, friends, and particularly teachers, things I've read, listened to over the years, and many of you know that Richard Rohr's one of them, I look as being formative for me, foundational and formative, and probably the reason I'm actually still a Christian. Without some of their influences, I don't think I'd be a Christian. And Henry Nouwen is one of those figures for me long before I'd ever heard of Richard Rohr. I probably first heard of Henry Nouwen, I read Henry Nouwen, The Wounded Healer, probably in the late 80s. So this is quite a long journey for me and for some of you. Some of the most significant shaping of both my understanding but also of my lived experience, my emotional experience of God as a loving God and of Jesus's good news of the kingdom come from someone like Henry Nouwen. And I've revisited, it's one of those books I've revisited, I'm not sure how many times over the last 25 years, but just recently I haven't really gone back through it over probably 10 years, I can't remember. And that's what I want to share out, invite you into. For those of you who don't know much about him, let me offer a brief introduction. Henry Nouwen was born in 1932 in the Netherlands and died in 1996, aged only 64. Interestingly for Henry, Rembrandt, who we're going to look at today, died at the age of 63. And this book was published in 1992. In fact, only 4 years before he died quite suddenly. Nouwen was a Dutch Catholic priest educated in theology and psychology who had an incredibly accomplished academic career that began with a visiting professorship at the University of Notre Dame in America. He was also one of the 20th century's foremost Christian spirituality writers, authoring thousands of pages of instant and timeless classics. And some of you will have read multiple ones as I have. He was a Dutch Catholic, I've said that. In the early 1980s, he left the teaching position at Yale Divinity School to reassess his own vocation. He felt somehow that God was igniting and repurposing his life and calling him to serve and live among the people in poverty. And he moved to South America, where he spent 6 months learning Spanish before serving as a priest among the oppressed of Peru. But as he discerned what was the proper yes to his evolving vocation, he determined it didn't involve staying in South America. He returned to the US, where he took a teaching job at Harvard Divinity School. It was during this period of life that he first met community members from LASH, an international group of communities for adults with intellectual disabilities. From there, he ended up meeting LASH's founder, Jean Vanier. Through their friendship, Naum began to find direction for his inner restlessness. Vanier's example of embodied solidarity and love rooted in community provoked a refreshed vocational imagination that captivated Naum, and I would say unlocked a deep longing for him, for home. Naum invited Vanier to visit Harvard to deliver a series of lectures titled From Brokenness to Community. And Vanier was astounded at how well loved Naum was by his students, yet how dissatisfied Naum seemed to be in an academic environment. Shortly after, Vanier invited Naum to join LASH, first in France, then later on in Canada. First in France, where he encountered the poster of this painting. Then later on in Canada. And after finally settling in community outside Toronto, Naum hit a psychological wall and a crisis of faith and identity. This is the experience he talks about in the video segment we're about to watch. So I want to give you a taste of the man himself, where he talks about his journey with the parable, Rembrandt's painting about the parable, and his own spiritual journey. And then I just have a moment of silence while you sit with whatever strikes you from what you hear from Henry Naum. And then I'll say a few words, and Pinky's going to come and then come and read the whole parable to us.
One of Henry's most important works was inspired by Rembrandt's painting, The Return of the Prodigal Son. In this book, he summarized some of the major themes which ran through his own life and work. In a recent issue of Oprah magazine, Hillary Clinton chose The Return of the Prodigal Son by Henry Naum as her favorite book.
When I saw the poster of the Rembrandt painting in which the father embraces his returning son, I was totally overwhelmed. And when I saw this embrace, I said, that's where I want to be. And out of that, I started to think about myself as the prodigal son that wanted to return home. But then I started to study the painting, and I went all the way to St. Petersburg to see the original painting of Rembrandt. The older son suddenly started to speak to me. That I'm the older son myself, you know, in my family. And there was a lot of resentment in me, a lot of not fully enjoying being in the church. And so I suddenly discovered I was these two sons, both. And then something incredibly important happened. I got very depressed, and I had to take some time away. And one member of my community came to visit me, and she said, Henry, you're talking about yourself being the younger son, and you're talking about yourself being the older son, but you have to be the father now. That's who you're called to be, the father. And look at the father in the painting. You know, look, the father has a hand of a mother and a hand of a father. That's a male hand and a female hand touching the son. Look at the father, who is like a mother with a big cloak, like the mother bird who holds his young safe. Look at the father who wants to welcome his son back without asking any questions. The father didn't even want to hear the story of the younger son. The father doesn't even want to hear the story of the older son. He wants them to be back home on the same table with him, so that they can grow up and become like him. And I suddenly discovered my final vocation is to not only to go home, but to bring people home by saying, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're here. Just get out the beautiful ring and get all the sandals and get all. Let's celebrate because you're back.
Just take a moment. You may want to look at the postcard that I've put on your chair. What touches you just from hearing Henry's encapsulating what is like a 3 or 4 year journey for him with the parable in dialogue with Rembrandt. And I say that there's a richness in his own transformational journey between now and a 20th century man, Jesus's 2,000 year old parable, and Rembrandt's nearly 350 year old painting. It's an interaction. So just pause a moment, I'll make a comment, and then Pinky will join us. So whilst there's no way, this is the overview for me, I am going to do Henry justice of the layers in this book. What I want to do was invite you to a similar brief journey of listening to how does each of the characters of younger son, elder son, the father, mother, God, touch your life at this point in time? And what might you want to listen to today that helps you more fully embrace the experience that God longs for each of us of being the beloved? And before I get Pinky to come, I do want to make one other important acknowledgement, that this is a very masculine story, obviously. It's told in a very patriarchal society by Jesus 2,000 years ago. It's painted by a man 350 years ago. And the book is written by a 20th century man. So it's a story from men, which I think some women may find, do find difficult to enter. So there's no explaining that away. I just want to acknowledge it and invite you to find your way around it or into it, because I still think there is blessing for you in that. And the other thing I'd say is, as a man, I think this and other books like this or people like this have been part of my journey as a man to engage, get to know, be comfortable with my own more tender side and my own more feminine side of me. That's been helpful for me. Thanks, Pinky. Sorry, and better after the line is if the kids can particularly listen. No, everybody needs to listen to this, including the kids, because Claire is going to be working with the kids to see what parts of this story engage you as well as the adults.
If I could just say something personal for 1 minute, Mike?
No.
No? Okay.
Please.
I didn't want to be just the reader. When I was going through my darkest times, Michael lent me a whole set of books, and in it was this book, and I read it twice. And since then, I'm highly challenged to identify myself at times as the father, because growing up in my formative years as a Christian, it's always been either the two sons, and I've never been challenged to think of myself as a father. And this book has changed how I think about myself, particularly, you know, with this text. So I just wanted to share that with you. Okay, so the story of two sons and their father. There was a man who had two sons. The younger son said to the father, "Father, let me have the share of the estate that will come to me." So the father divided the property between them. A few days later, the younger son got together everything he had and left for a distant country, where he squandered his money on a life of debauchery. When he had spent it all, that country experienced a severe famine. And now he began to feel the pinch, so he hired himself out to one of the local inhabitants, who put him on his farm to feed the pigs. And he would willingly have filled himself with the husks the pigs were eating, but no one would let him have them. Then he came to his senses and said, "How many of my father's hired men have all the food they want and more, and here I am dying of hunger? I will leave this place and go to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired men.' So he left the place and went back to his father. While he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was moved with pity. He ran to the boy, clasped him in his arms, and kissed him. Then his son said, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the calf we have been fattening and kill it. We will celebrate by having a feast because this son of mine was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Now the elder son was out in the fields and on his way back. As he drew near the house, he could hear music and dancing. Calling one of the servants, he asked what it was all about. The servant told him, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the calf we had been fattening because he had got him back safe and sound." He was angry and refused to come in, and his father came out and began to urge him to come in. But he retorted to his father, "All these years I have slaved for you and never once disobeyed any orders of yours, yet you never offered me so much as a kid for me to celebrate with my friends. But for this son of yours, when he comes back after swallowing up your property, he and his loose men, you kill the calf we had been fattening." The father said, "My son, you are with me always, and all I have is yours. But it is only right we should celebrate and rejoice, because your father here was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and is found."
So which character or character gets your attention today that you might like to consider? Because if I think about growing up in Sunday school, it was always about the prodigal son and how rotten he was and what an amazing conversion experience he had. And it was about being welcomed back by the father, but the focus was the prodigal. But notice the title there is the two sons and the father. And in the painting, so you know, I mean, and you may like to relate to the parable, you may like to relate to the painting. This obviously is the prodigal. This traditionally is thought to be the elder son. And behind here, and in the tradition of Rembrandt, there was lots of, this is about the Pharisees, and behind him is the publican who not, So typically it's the self-righteous Pharisees is often identified with the elder son. So what I want to do before we do communion is I want to take you through the same movements as the book. So in the book he talks about the younger son leaving and returning. But he also talks about the elder son leaving and returning, getting lost. And then the father. What I forgot to say, it really is important to know the context in which this is happening. So the verses that precede this parable in Luke 15 is, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were gathering around to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" And then he tells the three stories of precious things that are lost and found. Yeah, the lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost son, and the rejoicing that happens with the father when these lost things are found. So let's, can we have the next slide? So in the next 20 minutes, half an hour, I'm going to invite you to engage with each of the characters. And I'm going to read you little bits, I'll try and be restrained, from Henry Nouwen's writing about each of the characters. And invite you just to see what triggers for you. And now in his talking about it, I have three CDs where Henry Nouwen is teaching about this, if nobody wants them. He talks about the movement of the younger son from dissipation to containment. And what he's writing about there is, well, no, I'll read you. So first of all, we often underestimate the incredible radicalness of Jesus in this story. What he is telling about is something that is culturally impossible and obnoxious in the history of the time. So by the son asking for his inheritance, he's effectively saying, I wish you were dead. So we miss the serious, the obnoxiousness of what Jesus is saying. And then Nouwen writes, the son's leaving is much more offensive than it seems at first reading. It is a heartless rejection of the home in which the son was born and nurtured and break with the most precious tradition carefully upheld by the larger community of which he was a part. He speaks about a drastic cutting loose from a way of living, thinking and acting that had been handed down to him from generation to generation. More than disrespect, it's a betrayal of the treasured values and community. The distant country is the world in which everything considered holy at home is disregarded. This explanation is significant for me, not only because it provides me with an accurate understanding of the parable, but it summons me to recognize the younger son in myself. At first, it seems hard to discover in my own life such a defiant rebellion. But when I look carefully at the many or more less subtle ways I have preferred the distant country to the home close by, the younger son quickly emerges. I'm speaking here about a spiritual leaving at home. More than any other story in the gospel, the parable of the prodigal son expresses the boundlessness of God's compassionate love, because he allows the son to leave and to wear the pain of the leaving. When I place myself in the story in light of that divine love, it becomes painfully clear that leaving home is a much closer to my spiritual experience. So he essentially says, leaving home is then whenever I deny the spiritual reality that I belong with God with every part of my being, that God holds me safe in an eternal grace, that I am indeed carved in the palm of God's hand. Home is the center of my being, where I can hear the voice that says, you are my beloved, on you my favor rests. The same voice that was spoken to Jesus. The same voice that speaks to all the children of God and sets them free to live in the midst of a dark world. So Nouwen talks about all the ways that he inwardly looks for love and belonging and acceptance from other people, from being successful. Does it make sense? So he talks about all the ways that he takes himself away from being the beloved of God because he's looking for it in all the wrong places, instead of hanging on to being the beloved of God. Looking at all the way that he talks about leaving regularly because he gets caught up in what other people are going to think of him. He gets caught up in trying to prove he's successful, instead of finding a way of inwardly coming home to our identity. Our identity and our value is given by God because we are created in the image of God. And every time we allow ourselves to be drawn out to it, we are going into the far country. Let me just pause, see what comes up for you. So his framing of the younger son's journey is dissipation, looking for his identity and his grounding and belonging and being home within himself, claiming that identity as opposed to dissipating, containing himself by claiming that identity rather than dissipating himself, looking for it in all the wrong places. I identify with that, even to today, you know, worrying about what you might think of me here. So let's move to the elder son. And Nouwen frames this one as the movement from resentment to gratitude. From resentment to gratitude. And he writes, the parable that Rembrandt painted might be called the parable of the lost sons. Not only did the younger son who left home look for freedom and happiness in a distant country get lost, but the one who stayed home also became a lost man. Exteriorly, he did all the things a good son is supposed to do. But interiorly, he wandered away from his father's love. He did his duty, worked hard every day, and fulfilled all his obligations, but became increasingly unhappy and unfree, burdened by duty and obligation, and feeling like that should give him his reward from God. Nouwen writes, the heading here is called Lost in Resentment. I can identify resentment. It is hard for me to concede that this bitter, resentful, angry man, the elder son, might be closer to me in a spiritual way than the lustful younger brother. Yet the more I think about the elder son, the more I recognize myself in him. As the eldest son in my own family, I know well what it feels like to have been a model son. All my life, he says, I've harbored a strange curiosity for the disobedient life that I myself never dared to live, but which I saw being lived by many around me. I did all the proper things, mostly complying with the agenda set by many parental figures in my life, teachers, spiritual directors, bishops and popes. But at the same time, I often wonder why I didn't have the courage to run away as the younger son did. The obedient and dutiful life of which I'm proud or for which I'm praised feels sometimes like a burden that was laid on my shoulders and continues to oppress me. In this complaint, obedience and duty have become a burden and service has become slavery. This inner resentment reveals to me my own lostness. I had stayed home and didn't wander off, but I've not yet lived a free life in my father's house. My anger and envy showed for me my own bondage. That'll do. I invite you to, where in your life in general, or perhaps in your life with God, are you not living in the freedom and loving acceptance of the Heavenly Father? You're welcome to talk to somebody next to you if you would like to, as well as sit silently. All right, let's move towards the Father. But one of the interesting things Nouwen writes about is how what happens with the elder son is unclear from the parable. It's an open question. Does he return or not? And this heading is called A Possible Conversion. The father wants not only his younger son back, but his elder son as well. The elder son too, son or daughter, needs to be found and led back into the house of joy. Will he respond to his father's plea or remain stuck in his bitterness? Rembrandt does not reveal whether he sees the light. As he does not clearly condemn the elder brother, Rembrandt holds out the hope that he too will perceive he is a sinner. The father only is good. He loves both sons. He runs out to meet both. He wants both to sit at his table and participate in his joy. The younger brother allows himself to be held in a forgiving embrace. The elder son stands back, looks at the father's merciful gesture, and cannot yet step over his anger and let his father heal him as well. The father's love does not force itself on the beloved. So let's go to this one. The welcoming father, mother God. And there's another move after this that I'll share at communion. So Nouwen, in his tapes, calls this the move from the welcoming from a God of fear, a God whom I'm a little bit distant from and afraid of, like an adult parent, and a God of love. And I recognize this journey. So he says, it dawned on me that even my best theological and spiritual formation had not been able to completely free me from a Father God who remained somewhat threatening and somewhat fearsome. All I had learned about the Father's love had not fully enabled me to let go of an authority above me who had power over me and would use it according to his will. Somehow God's love for me was limited by my fear of God's power, and it seemed wise to keep a careful distance, even though the desire for closeness was immense. I find that extraordinary. And I recognize myself, there's a bit of it holds me back. And then I want to read you this piece. which is the parable. Here we go. Instead of it being called The Return of the Prodigal Son, this painting and the story could more easily have been called The Welcome by the Compassionate Father. The emphasis is less on the son than on the father. The parable is in truth a parable of the father's love. And as Mauen and Rembrandt said, the father and mother's love. Looking at the way which Rembrandt portrays the father, I invite you to look at your postcard, there came to me a whole new interior understanding of tenderness, mercy, and forgiveness. Everything comes together here. Rembrandt's story, humanity's story, and God's story. So one of the key things he unpacks in the book is that Rembrandt, now talks about Rembrandt's history and say Rembrandt demonstrated all three characters, but only at the very end of his life, after a great deal of loss and suffering, could he paint this picture of the Father's love. What gives Rembrandt's portrayal of the Father such an irresistible power is that the most divine is captured in the most human. I see a half-blind old man with a moustache and a parted beard, dressed in a gold-embroidered garment and a deep red cloak, laying his large, stiffened hands on the shoulder of his returning son. And he talks about one being a male hand and one being a female hand. This is very specific, concrete, and describable. I also see how infinite compassion, unconditional love, everlasting forgiveness, divine realities emanating from a father who is the creator of the universe. Here, both the human and the divine, the fragile and the powerful, the old and the eternally young, are fully expressed. This is Rembrandt's genius, the spiritual truth completely enfleshed. It is a special significance that Rembrandt chose a nearly blind old man to communicate God's love. Surely the parable of Jesus told and the way the parable has been interpreted through the centuries offer the main basis for the portrayal of God's merciful love. And I shouldn't forget that it was Rembrandt's own story that enabled him to give it this unique expression. Here is the God, I'll stop with this, here is the God I want to believe in, a Father who, from the beginning of creation, has stretched out his arms in merciful blessing, never forcing himself on anyone, but always waiting, never letting his arms drop down in despair, but always hoping that his children will return so that he can speak words of love to them and let his tired old arms rest on their shoulders. His only desire is to bless. So let me pause there. How do you respond to Rembrandt's human portrayal of God's welcoming love for you? How might this portrayal enrich your own experience of God's presence in your life? Just have a moment and then we'll come together for communion. So sit quietly with that. If you want to talk to somebody, please do.